This show is sponsored by MidasResources.com, your trusted source for precious metals since 1996. Call Midas today at 1-800-686-2237.
Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
Well, we had a great show last week. Lloyd Auerbach, certainly one of our best guests. I think our listeners agree. Because I'm looking at the comments made. There aren't a lot of them, but those who did listen to him really enjoyed what he had to say. It was one of our most downloaded episodes.
Yeah.
And I was very impressed by his level-headed approach to the whole subject, by the fact that he's not afraid to be appropriately skeptical.
Right. Well, right. We're going to have three in a row, a trifecta with level-headed experts.
Right, and we'll get into that in a moment. This is one where anytime we have this guest on, it's going to be direct, it's going to be forthright, and we'll even worry as we progress whether he'll get so ornery he'll just leave. So
well,
that could happen.
Yeah, it could. It could. You know, all bets are off.
We'll explain that in a few moments. Okay. So, as most of you know, despite one's better judgment, I am a member of MUFON and have been for quite a long time. We know that MUFON has this TV show that uses their name called Hangar One, which has got an incredible amount of criticisms because of the fact that they've put on some cases there for the sensational value, not because these cases are necessarily credible.
Or even MUFON reports.
Right. So was it the old story of Jackie Gleason and one of the presidents seeing the little gray men or whatever? You know, it's for nonsense. But I'm looking here at the May 2014 edition of MUFON's journal, issue number 553. So imagine this. They've published 553 monthly magazines. And that's a lot of stuff. It's a lot of information. And in this one, Jan Harzan, who's their international director and has been a guest on the Paracast, by the way,
yeah,
he remarks here that the TV show has brought a flood of new witnesses, that a lot of people having watched this show have taken it seriously, despite the questionable nature of the content, but that's my editorial comment, and have reported their experiences, but some are pretty wacky. So he talks about supposedly somebody who was traveling from Phoenix to San Diego. This is back in the 1970s. And he picked up a hitchhiker. Now, we all know that that's not necessarily the safest thing to do because when you pick up a hitchhiker, you don't know who they are and what they're planning. He picked up the hitchhiker, a gentleman who claimed to be E.T., claimed to be an extraterrestrial. That's one of the things they heard. Okay, that's pretty wacky. Let's get to the other one here, where somebody claims to have befriended a gentleman in the military who said he had some important information he needed to keep safe, and then told a story about being followed by men in black. Now, it's very possible these cases are as described, that somebody picked up a hitchhiker and that person claimed to be E.T. It's also possible that there were alleged men in black involved in this other case. Very possible. But you wonder here whether a TV show like that with outrageous, improperly researched information attracts a crowd of people who are going to report wacky stuff.
I think that's kind of a foregone conclusion. You know, I'm just wondering about the guy that picked up E.T. Didn't he notice that he had a long, skinny neck and these, like, paddle-like feet and was only about 2.5 feet tall?
Well, if it was that, but the person claimed to have assumed a human form, so as not to upset anybody.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about the E.T.
No, the E.T. Went, you know, who knows? Who knows what form E.T. might take, and who knows whether or not the form in which we see them is their real form. You know, you think back to the movie Contact, where in that movie Jodie Foster supposedly meets E.T., who appears to her in the form of her late father, with whom she had unresolved issues, whatever. And he said that he did that to appear more acceptable to her. Not like the creatures and it came from outer space. Who knows what E.T. looks like?
But wait a minute, Gene. Hold on. If they have the technology to fly between star systems, what the hell is the guy doing hitchhiking? It doesn't make sense.
He wants to see how the other half lives.
What, they ran out of trilithium crystal and he had to, like, hitchhike to the nearest star station or something? Or?
Well, remember Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home.
Right.
They had to get those dilithium crystals. And, of course, in 20th century Earth, getting dilithium crystals is pretty difficult. Scotty had to work extra hard. He had to use a first-generation Apple Macintosh, for example, to create transparent aluminum. Does anyone know what I'm talking about?
Is that the one with the whales? They had to capture the whales?
They had to capture the humpback whales.
Right.
And that's the one directed by...
Leonard Nimoy.
Right. And you know what other film he directed?
I Am Curious Yellow.
You wish. Three Men and a Baby.
Really?
Really, the first one. He directed that.
Boy, you are quite the film buff, boy.
Well, you know, I do want to let the cat out of the bag. I've been in touch with Tracy Torme and maybe doing a little research for 701 the movie. Okay?
Okay.
All right, we're looking into current cases, by the way, ladies and gentlemen. Looking for cases like 2013 and 2014. As a matter of fact, there is one in the MUFON Journal, December 25th, 2013. One of these nighttime sightings where someone's in a car and they see this big dark object. You know, one of those typical classic-style cases that happen at night. And, you know, it's funny. If you look at the reports of UFOs in 2013, we had almost a genuine flap there. Maybe it didn't get national publicity as in the old days, but there are lots of sightings, not just in the MUFON Journal.
Yeah, no, definitely was a spike, especially in the beginning of the year.
Right, also in Canada. Chris Rutkowski was on our show just a few weeks back talking about the Canadian UFO flap.
Right.
An amazing number of sightings, as if E.T. or whatever the UFOs are, and we're not saying it's E.T., as if they have returned to see what's going on. Or maybe because the Arctic caps are melting?
Maybe they're being driven south.
Right. So they can't have their Arctic and Antarctic bases anymore.
Right. Their
global warming.
Fortress of solitude.
Yes. The Fortress of Solitude is going to melt. Think about that. Maybe the next Man of Steel movie, Batman versus Superman, his Fortress of Solitude will have melted. He'll have to get an apartment in Metropolis or something. You know, rents are pretty high. You know, working as a reporter, you don't get a lot of money. How does he afford it?
It's even worse in Gotham City.
Yeah, but Bruce Wayne's a billionaire, so it doesn't matter.
Oh, true.
As is in the Arrow TV series, Oliver Queen is a billionaire, although in the series now he's an ex-billionaire. We have a great guest today, and I don't know what we're talking about, but let's talk about our guest. And this guest is A number one in our book. He's somebody who's been on the show before, and he is forthright. He is direct.
Oh, boy, is he.
He takes no prisoners.
No. No, he doesn't. Ray Stanford, again, I sound like a broken record. I have not met anyone in this field that has the 50-plus, almost 60-year history and experience of investigating real-time, going out in the field and investigating UFO reports, and actually gaining incredible evidence that is very controversial here at the Paracast, but, you know, having seen these presentations, and along with a lot of other people outside of the field of ufology that have seen these. This is no elite ufology club, as one of our posters whined. He has made his material available to a number of scientists in a number of different disciplines. And, you know, if you piggyback on top of his paleontological work of looking down and looking at trackways, Ray's been looking up for 60 years and looking at trackways in the sky. And, you know, at some point, this information is going to come out, and all the naysayers and boo-birds are going to have to take one big giant step back. I'm really glad that Ray agreed to come on the show. He's pretty shy and retiring when it comes to, you know, exposing, you know, his current thinking, his current work on radio and on TV. But he recently had... So we're really looking forward to having Ray on the show, and we're going to hear a lot of really interesting stuff as usual.
You want to sit down? You want to get ready for this one? It's going to be a doozy. Ray Stanford coming up next with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there's The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, R-O-C-K-O-I-D-S.com.
So here's what happened. I was placing an order online. The site went down. It took hours before it returned, but I had already placed the order with another company. If your site goes down, you could lose business. And if you have a business or personal site, you'll want to know it's easy to run and it will stay online. At iWeb, your site is hosted on one of the most reliable networks in the world. Talk to a sales rep at iWeb.com. Use the promo code TechNightOwl for a special discount.
Gold is like nothing else on Earth. From the Romans through the Renaissance, from the Industrial Age to the Space Age, gold has weathered the test of time. For 6,000 years, gold has remained the ultimate store of wealth. According to the World Gold Council and the U.S. Mint, demand is at an all-time high. The stage is being set for the reemergence of gold as the common-sense alternative to a fiat paper currency that gets weaker every day. Midas Resources is proud to offer the hard-hitting report that arms you with the truth you need to protect you and your family from the Fed's plans for your hard-earned money. Don't gamble with your future. Call Midas Resources today and ask for your free copy of As Good as Gold. Call 1-800-686-2237 for the report the Fed hopes you'll never see. As Good as Gold can be yours by calling 800-686-2237. If you have ever thought about owning gold, you must read this report. Call Midas today at 800-686-2237.
For over 5 years, you've been hearing about the Berkey guy, so you may know a few things about him. For example, you are well aware of the superior quality and effectiveness of Berkey water filters and accessories. But did you know the Berkeys have had independent lab tests done to prove just how effective they are? It's true, and he can email you the test results. Just visit GoBerkey.com. You may also know that the Berkey guy has helped tens of thousands of people get better prepared. Now here's something you may not know. GoBerkey.com has amazing specials and deals all the time on a wide variety of survival and preparedness products, most ready to ship same day. Visit the Berkey guy at GoBerkey.com. And be sure to click the red Products on Sale Now button. You can always call toll-free 877-886-3653. Again, that's 877-886-3653. GoBerkey.com, home of the Berkey guy.
Springtime is saved big time at Herbal Healer Academy. Long-term customers know spring is the time to stock up at HerbalHealer.com. And for new customers, welcome to the web's best place to save on vitamins, minerals, and more. Log on for spring specials, including our 500 parts per million colloidal silver, all sizes on sale. Choose from Herbal Healer's great variety of weight loss products like apple cider vinegar, Hoodia and Metabolic Complex, and Pro Metabolic, all on sale now. Also, the anti-parasite Intestinal Freedom and Warwood Plus Complex, plus Stevia Liquid Sweetener and the Super Enzymes, all on sale for spring at HerbalHealer.com. As always, we offer certificate correspondence courses in natural medicine. Enjoy same-day shipping and free online newsletter. Log on now to HerbalHealer.com and click on Spring Specials to save big with our nation's leader in supplying quality natural medicine and education since 1988, Herbal Healer Academy.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Proud to have Ray Stanford back on the Paracast. As I said before, we're not just trying to butter him up. He's always one of our favorite guests. He's forthright, he's honest, he's direct, he takes no prisoners. But I think if you upset him, you'll become his prisoner. I don't know. But anyway, Ray, welcome back on the show. Now, I thought of you again because a few weeks back we had James Fox, who's working on this new UFO documentary, which is currently called 701. And he mentioned spending a week with you, Ray. Can you tell us more about that?
Well, yeah, he spent, I think, 8 days here at least, and it was a wonderful time. He's a mighty fine person who I believe is trying to do a really bang-up job from talking with him, and I had some talk with him last night. I think that they may end up with absolutely the finest UFO-related movie that has ever been done. I mean, way beyond anything else. His objectivity and direct honesty, desire to present things as they are without exaggeration, just being factual, and so on, impressed me a lot. We went through a lot of things when James was here, and we spent, I think, 2 days or more at the National Archive. And, of course, as I think he probably mentioned in the interview that you had with him a few weeks ago, that we came across a great document that just thrilled me, more thrill than I've had in years, that was written in early September 1964 by Dr. J. Allen Hynek to the Division of Foreign Technology at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, that actually drew the red symbol that Zamora had seen on the side of the vehicle. And indeed, it contained the V with three lines that I had said in my appendix in the book was probably the real symbol and not the one with the arc with the arrow in it and the line under it that Zamora had told people he had seen after he had a heart-to-heart conversation with Captain Richard T. Holder, who was the uprange commander at White Sands. That was the integrated home in White Sands Range, which means it was used jointly by the Air Force and the Army. So that was a thrill to finally have a confirmation. I had taken a lot of flack from predictable sources that said, well, for example, the late Dick Hall had tied into me, said, well, look, I called Zamora 2 weeks after the event, and I asked him to send me a drawing of what he saw on the side of the thing. And I've got this drawing, and it's an arc with an arrow and a line under it. Well, of course, but that's what Zamora promised. That he promised Richard T. Holder, the upper-range commander at White Sands, that he would do. And he was just doing his patriotic duty. It was, in my opinion, simply a textbook intelligence ploy, and a good one, because I can understand Holder's position. He just didn't see that there was any reason why the public needs to know exactly what Zamora saw, but if they began to get copycat reports from, you know, Joe Copycat out there, and describing the wrong symbol on the side, they wouldn't have to investigate it. And this was, I think, one of the, if not the major reason why he wanted Zamora to obfuscate the symbol. But let me, in mentioning that, mention that the obfuscation of the occupants, and by Dr. Hynek in his press conference described in my Socorro book, the obfuscation, in fact, by Zamora for quite a while afterward, after he had talked to the FBI agent Arthur Barnes, was at the request of Barnes, he suggested that he not get into publicly the discussion of the fact that there were these little beings there. Now, people have asked me, and I went over this with James Fox quite in detail, people have asked me, now, did Zamora really say that these guys were little bitty guys, or were they, could have just been small, you know, 5'6" humans? The answer is, they definitely were small. He stood there beside the northwest creosote bush, by the northwest imprint, Landinger imprint. He stood there. He was on my right, and Hynek was on my left, and he put his right hand up about 6 inches below the branch that was sticking out there, and he said, I'm up there on the rise. He said, I was not standing there. He said his head came about this far down below this branch. And I said, Monty, in practical terms, what height person would you put there? How would you describe it? He said, well, it was like a little boy, maybe 10 years old. There was no ambiguity about it. Of course, he was with Hynek, to whom he was supposed to tell the truth, nothing but the truth. He was the Air Force representative at that time. And this was not in the public situation. But ironically, when we got over to the press conference within the half hour afterward at the motel, if you read the account verbatim from a tape recording in my book of that press conference, Hynek, as I described it, pussyfoots again and again. And Walter Schrode of Radio KSRC in Socorro said, well, did he tell you about seeing these small beings? And he said, no, he didn't say anything about any small beings to me. He described something about something that resembled white coveralls. I was supposing I'm going to fly outside the Grafford Rhine. That's what Heineck did right after, I mean, within a half an hour after, right there on the site, the more I had discussed this with us and told how small these beings were.
Now, let me ask you a question here so we can define it better. What value is served by not giving so much information about the beings? I understand maybe you want to hide those labels, those emblems, because you don't want fakers to know what's going on.
Right.
But
okay.
Why didn't we hear so much about the beings seen?
Well, excellent question.
The case?
And here's my hypothesis to explain it. I believe that the FBI agent felt that if he said that there were these little guys out there, that immediately this would lend itself in the public mind to the interpretation that little aliens had landed there in the craft. In other words, it would tilt it toward the extraterrestrial interpretation. And I think that in his mind, in J. Arthur Burns, the FBI agent's mind, that was a perfectly good reason to ask him to play that down. I think that might have been the words he used or not to discuss it anyway. Because, you know, it really would. Immediately, it begins to sound like the guy saw aliens, because we don't usually have, for example, in Black Project Craft, we don't usually have a couple of midgets flying them around.
Good point. For our new listeners and folks maybe not up to speed about the Socorro incident, this is one of the cornerstone cases in ufology in the estimation of many ufologists that have studied this phenomenon for decades. This is one of the most important cases. In Ray's book, Socorro Saucer in a Pentagon Pantry, in my estimation, my opinion, is the finest book ever written about a single UFO case. I mean, not only do you leave no stone unturned, you overturn stones and found incredible physical evidence.
Right.
Now, Ray, we've had in the last 3 years, there's been an attempt to rewrite history by some researchers out there that have claimed that a letter written by a professor at a local college there, written to Linus Pauling, actually, the famous Linus Pauling, Nobel Prize winner, that this was all, the Socorro event was all a hoax by college students, and they put up a balloon with some flares on it and to get back at Zamora for whatever reason. Now, a lot of people have chimed in on this, in my estimation, ludicrous interpretation or explanation. Dave Rudiak has been very, very vocal about it. Now, we did a whole show discussing this, which I recommend that our listeners go back and listen to. But what is your recent feelings about this? Do you think that with the 50-year anniversary now of Socorro, do you feel that this case still is as important and as relevant, I think, now as it was prior to these revisionist historians?
Good. We'll have Ray's answer at the other side. We have Ray Stanford joining Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Great minds think alike. The network for the independent minded. The Genesis Communications Network. GCN.
Is there a secret UFO agenda? Do strange creatures from the darkest corners of the mind roam the earth? Is there evidence for mind control, time travel, or devious government conspiracies? Find out the inside scoop on the latest conspiracies, paranormal activity, and floating phenomena when you subscribe to Tim Beckley's Conspiracy Journal. It's jam-packed with stories, special book and DVD promotions, and the best news, it's absolutely free, sent right to your mailbox. Plus, a bonus free email newsletter sent out every Friday. Simply send an email with your name and address to MrUFO@webtv.net. That's MrUFO@webtv.net. Find out what they don't want you to know.
This alert just came in. This special announcement is for business owners and leaders of organizations who've been waiting for the right time to build. General Steel has made it impossible to wait any longer with rock-bottom prices that could save you thousands. That's right. General Steel, America's leader in pre-engineered structures, is offering buildings at prices you will never see again. Don't miss these prices. A 50 by 100 for $35,000. You heard right. That's 5,000 square feet for $35,000. Manufacturers, if you need a larger building, try a 100 by 100 commercial building for $129,000. You can't afford to rent with these prices. Imagine a 70 by 100 foot church building for under $69,000. With the economy improving and interest rates still at historic lows, you can't afford to wait. So call 866-91-STEEL. Lock in your price now. Call 866-91-STEEL. That's 866-917-8335.
I will never forget the day my son Jeremy told me he hated me and slammed the door in my face. I'm behavioral therapist Janet Lehman. Behavior problems can turn the child you love and your life into a nightmare. That's why my husband James and I created the Total Transformation, the step-by-step program that shows you how to fix the worst behavior problems and get your child to respect and listen to you again. No matter what the behavior, defiance, backtalk, angry outbursts, disrespect, we can help you stop it. Now you can get the Total Transformation for free. All you need to do is get the program and let us know how it works for you. You can keep it forever for free.
Limited number of free programs available. Call now 1-888-912-1595. 1-888-912-1595. That's 1-888-912-1595. 1-888-912-1595.
Question: could too many GMO foods and toxins be overloading your digestive and immune systems? Answer: yes. If you're searching for a powerful detox that's gentle enough to use every day, use Pro-EM1 from Terraganics. Pro-EM1 is a powerful liquid probiotic that uses good bacteria to suppress pathogens and gently eliminate toxins from your body. A healthy digestive system will cleanse and remove toxins, support weight loss, improve absorption of food nutrients, and aid in controlling yeast and other infections. Pro-EM1 is made with only non-GMO and certified organic ingredients, has no preservatives, and is dairy, soy, wheat, and gluten-free. Pro-EM1 is the key to your digestive health. Order Pro-EM1 Daily Probiotic Cleanse at Terraganics.com, spelled TerraGanix.com, or call toll-free 866-369-3678. That's 866-369-3678. Also available through Amazon Prime. Pro-EM1 from Terraganics. Life's getting better.
This is Leslie Kane, and I'm with the Coalition for Freedom of Information, and you are listening to the Paracast.
Now, before we go on with Ray Stanford, I do want to say one thing. You know, we want to be very fair here on the Paracast and give different viewpoints their expression. So in the case of the Sicaro case, the certain blogger with a certain blog who made the biggest splash over claiming it was some kind of hoax or something, we invited that person to come on the Paracast, and he has given us every which way of an excuse not to come on the show. First, he didn't have time. Then he had a sensitive job that would somehow be impacted if he went on a paranormal radio show, although he has no problem about writing about the paranormal, about UFOs in print. We're not going to mention his name or the blog, Ray, okay? You know who he is, of course, but we're
okay,
not going
to... I'll try to restrain myself.
You must restrain yourself, because we don't want to give this person publicity, because I feel sometimes outrageous blog entries are meant as hit bait. They want to get traffic. They can sell ads. They can get the Google AdSense dollars. I don't know. And then he comes up with another blog attacking me and saying, well, he doesn't want to come on the show because I've had some financial problems, which a lot of people have. And that's a reason not to come on the show.
Oh, boy.
But, you know, at the end of the day, we have one very simple word about that, and it's called chicken. I mean, if he feels that he has sufficient evidence to support his point of view, we're happy to hear it.
Yeah, we wanted to have Ray and this person do a debate.
Right.
And when, as soon as he heard that, forget it. There was just no way that he was going to do that.
And I don't want to give this person any extra publicity or traffic. I know that after this show, he will be ranting and raving on that blog about how we're treating him. That's too bad. We gave him the chance to be on the show. All we got were excuses. So let's go past that. But obviously, the question is out there, Ray. How do you respond to people who might take something like this seriously?
Okay. It's very simple. Let me go back to my days, my first days at Socorro, and I've spent quite a number of visits there. But my very first visit there, Walter Schrode of Radio KSRC and I were sitting having dinner in a restaurant there in Socorro. And he said, oh, by the way, he said, I went over to the New Mexico School of Mines Tech, whatever they call it there, today, and talked to Sterling Colgate, who's the guy that Linus Pauling had gotten a letter from. And I asked him what he thought about this. And he said, well, of course, it's obviously a student prank. And he said, oh, really? Do you know who did it? He said, no, I don't know who did it. But he said, you know, look, the stars are too far away. He said, people are saying that an alien craft landed there. Well, it's impossible. So it had to be a student prank. We don't have a technology of that type that could do what was described. But he said, it has to be because the stars are too far away. Well, that to me is not a scientist talking. It sounds more like faith. But anyway, Schrode kind of laughed and I kind of laughed and, you know, well, that's your typical academia, got his head in the books, but not looking at the case. Here, years later, this letter crops up at where he happens to say to Linus Pauling that it was student notes. Well, I think that I don't think he intended that to become public. He was just stating his opinion. But after the years had passed, just remembering it more as the fact. That's the way people of faith are. And does he dare come out and say, well, you know, I was just, you know, that was just my opinion. Oh, no, not after those years and a letter to Linus Pauling. I don't think he would. And here's the problem with the whole story. It doesn't match the facts. In the first place, Lonnie Zamora, contrary to the reports that you read, even in the Air Force files, they'll talk about the distances vary from 800 feet or so that he was up on the hill when he saw the occupants down below to the more accurate accounts of over 400 feet, but probably less than 500 feet. The accounts will tell you that, oh, well, he parked his car. One of them says 120 feet from the object in the ravine and then got out and took a few steps started. That's not true. When I was there, Dr. Hynek had been driven there by the state police sergeant, Samuel Chavez, with Zamora, and he asked Zamora to have him park the car exactly where he parked his. And so I stood there in the door trying to feel the Zamora belt of that police car, and I know exactly where it was. And it was almost exactly 50 feet from the central line of where that thing was sitting in the ravine. And when Zamora finally took steps out of it, out of the car, and he took, if I remember correctly, three steps. And Alan asked me if I would walk off for them. The distance from where Zamora had hit the ground in a prone position with his head in the opposite direction, as he'd been trying to do in the Army explosions, I walked that off, and it was about 35 feet. Now, it's a clear, beautiful day. Let me point out that the wind was gusting out of the west-southwest, and there were gusts up to over 40 miles per hour at times. I don't know where the beach are coming from, but we'll ignore them. Keep that in mind. It's a very important fact. Anyway, Zamora saw this thing at close range, and he still had his glasses on. That's very important. They weren't knocked off until he ran after the engine, the takeoff engine, turned on. And in the tremendous roar, he finally got up when he realized it wasn't exploding, ran and bumped into the back left fender or bumper of the car, lost his glasses. So he had a good look within 50 and then 35 feet of the thing, and the insignia on the side. Now, the story that's been perpetrated on this case is that, well, finally they decide, well, these guys must have had a hot air balloon. Well, there's some big problems with that. In the first place, a thing was seen by tourists heading into the Whiting Brothers service station on the north side of town, and Opal Grinder and his son Jimmy had no idea what had happened down south of town with Zamora. But these tourists stopped an old green Cadillac, and Jimmy was wiping the windshield, and the guy said to Opal Grinder, he said, you know, you got some weird pilots flying around here. This weird aircraft almost took the roof off of my antenna, he said, the radio antenna off her car. He said, I saw this thing go over to the southwest of us. And he said, I saw a policeman and head up the hill in the direction it had gone. Let's keep in mind that then there had to be a balloon in the air. And Zamora saw apparently a landing exhaust flame. He heard the roar first, and he looked over there. He saw the flame. So this alleged hot air balloon had to be in the air. So you have to decrease the heat in order to make the thing descend. Now, this takes considerable time. In first place, the hot air balloon should not have produced enough noise that Zamora would have heard it in his police car. The wind was blowing strong. It's impossible. In the first place, they would have had to lower the temperature, gradually bring it to the ground. okay, there was a very short time that it took Zamora to get to the top of the hill. In a few more seconds, he saw the two occupants up there that were outside the craft, and he then went around alongside them that came up 50 feet from it and then took three steps, as I said. Okay, immediately the thing took off. They would have had to have then, having landed it and cut the temperature out of the hot air balloon, you would have to reheat it to make it rise. Impossible in the short time. If you've ever had any dealing with hot air balloons, as I have, it rises up to 20 feet and takes off directly into the west-southwest wind, the wind out of the west-southwest that was gusting at times over 40 miles per hour and was pretty steady over 30 miles per hour.
Wouldn't that make it pretty difficult also to control a hot air balloon?
Well, I would say so.
It'd be impossible.
Exactly. You know, you wonder what propulsion they had to propel this thing against this wind. But when it got over near the Perlite Mill over on the other side of Highway 60, which is west of the landing site, it took off rather vertically and very rapidly and very quickly became invisible due to distance. And I would mention here that there was a witness that most people don't know about, but several police officers that were friends of New Mexico State Police Sergeant Sam Chavez told me that he, contrary to what he told the media, he got the radio signal from Zamora. Zamora wanted him to come out there. He came, and he did see it far away up in the sky. When it was climbing up away from and then raising elevation, bear in mind this thing did not point its axis exactly in the direction of travel as it was going up vertically, which is typical of these anomalous aerial objects. So the thing, at tremendous speed, is going up. He saw it from the end zone, the round cross section of it. The bags were, of course, already inside of it, but it was disappearing rapidly, very quickly. There is no way that you can make a hot air balloon rise very quickly and, in fact, go out of sight. And I think, as Rudiak has shown, that the short time that was required to go out of sight, considering the size, would suggest that it probably became supersonic at that point. But not only can you not make a hot air balloon go supersonic, but even if you don't assume it was supersonic, it's climbing up. What's making it stay in a vertical climb, an almost vertical climb, slightly into the southwest, against the southwest wind instead of being blowing off to the east-northeast? It's impossible.
There's a lot more to say and a lot more to explain about why this could not have been a hot air balloon, and Ray will tell you more about it with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Not just an alternative to the mainstream media. We're the premier independent talk radio network. We are GCN.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Imagine an acne treatment breakthrough that even Proactiv says is better than Proactiv. Announcing all new Proactiv Plus, the revolutionary new way to clear your skin from the number one name in acne care. Proactiv Plus is our best, most effective solution ever. And when you call 1-800-721-4255 today, you can have it tomorrow. Proactiv Plus is the modern acne miracle that treats your skin beautifully. The plus means more. More precise, targeted medicine for faster, gentler acne prevention. And more skin-loving solutions so your complexion can look bright and beautiful.
I am just so happy with Proactiv Plus. I don't think my skin has ever looked this good.
Call 1-800-721-4255. Be one of the first to try Proactiv Plus. Guaranteed 100% risk-free. You won't see this limited-time offer on TV. It's a radio exclusive. 1-800-721-4255. 1-800-721-4255.
Hi, this is Steve Sanchez, and based on a recent study, it was found that 57 million Americans had legal issues over the last 12 months, but only 60% of those studied sought out the services of a lawyer. Why? In a nutshell, affordability. Well, my friends at Legal Shield have created a solution that can help you not if, but when you need an attorney. For as little as $17 per month, Legal Shield will provide you unlimited access to qualified attorneys at an accomplished law firm for advice and counsel on legal issues, no matter how serious or trivial. For over 40 years and with 1.4 million families across North America, Legal Shield can help you, the loyal GCN listener. Representatives are standing by now to answer your questions, so call them now at 1-855-340-SAVE. That's 1-855-340-7283, or visit them at lsprotection.com. That's lsprotection.com.
Results will vary from case to case.
Ouch! My back is out again!
Hi, Dr. Ortman with Wellspring Spinal Care. If you're experiencing neck, mid, or lower back pain, this information is for you. One of the complaints that I hear is patients receive their typical adjustment, only having to repeat them as the pain returns. Putting the bones back in place is only half of the battle. At Wellspring Spinal Care, we have the entire solution. We use the NUCA approach, utilizing three-dimensional x-rays and gentle touch technology to deliver specific correction. We then design a custom nutritional supplement program which provides essential nutrients targeting the areas of concern. With a NUCA approach and proper nutrition, you'll be on your way to a faster and more permanent recovery. To get you on the road to wellness, visit drortman.com. That's drortman.com. Or call us today, 952-303-9124. That's 952-303-9124. Wellspring Spinal Care. Chiropractic done right.
Hi, this is Don Ecker, and you are tuned into the Paracast. Let me tell you what, you're going to hear stuff here that you probably won't hear anywhere else. Hear that, George Snorri?
So we have the claim here that is being refuted step by step, inch by inch, from Ray Stanford, explaining why the Sicaro, New Mexico UFO could not have been a hot air balloon, even if you ignore the two small beings. So we can't have supersonic ray, we can't have supersonic hot air balloons, unless that's itself some kind of alien phenomenon.
It does. It surely does.
We won't even talk about the physical evidence left behind at the site. I mean,
let me mention one aspect of physical evidence, that there was a television broadcast which there was analysis done on Sicaro. There was analysis done at a lab from some of the soil out of the ravine. And it was determined that nobody could have melted the soil with a blowtorch. In fact, it would have taken a sustained heat at over 1,400 degrees centigrade to produce that soil in a vitrified state, a glassified, turned to glass. And let me say that the first reports of this vitrified glass came to the UFO world from the now late Dr. Jim McDonald at the University of Arizona, Tucson. He was the senior atmospheric physicist there, James McDonald. And he had learned it from a lady who I have a picture of her standing at the site with Air Force people and the FBI agent. Her name was her last name was May. I think her first name, if I remember correctly, was Mary. And she contacted Dr. McDonald and told him that vitrified soil from the site had been taken and analyzed at a lab, I believe, in Las Vegas, not in Nevada, but Las Vegas, New Mexico. Well, this is very interesting because I just discovered last week in an Air Force file on this that the physical evidence was not taken by the Air Force. You see no mention of, except for a search for hydrocarbons or propulsive materials in the leaves that I helped collect. I gave him the containers to collect them in for the Air Force. You see no other mention. You don't see the vitrified soil mentioned. Well, that was, in fact, taken by Captain Richard Holder. He had told, and it's mentioned in the Air Force report, that he had indicated that they had facilities, access to facilities through White Sands to get analysis done. That was then, that's how it got over New Mexico and to, ultimately, the laboratory in, apparently, Las Vegas, New Mexico. So we now know the route of it. And since it went through the Army, it's interesting. I think that, in fact, my friend Chris Lambright in Texas has, I think, filed two FOIA requests, one to headquarters of Army Intelligence, trying to find out what he can get, and they will not answer him. I mean, they've not responded to his requests, and I think the time limit is, at least the first time limit on a certain type of response has passed. I could be wrong, but the point is, they've never responded. But I think there's where it disappeared to. It disappeared into Army and not to the Air Force. And you know, I'm not saying that the Captain Holder, who was with the Army, had a conflict of interest, let's say inter-service rivalry, but you never know. Anyway, that does not show up, no mention of the vitrified soil in the Air Force files. But I should also say that Zamora told me in August of 64, when I came back right after the debacle at Goddard Space Flight Center about the metal scraped on the rock by the landing gear, he told me that State Senior Patrolman, New Mexico Senior Patrolman Ted V. Jordan, had been quite upset because he took what he felt would be very good ectochrome slides with his Argus C3 camera at the site. He arrived within a very short time, a minute and a half or two, after the thing was gone. He took pictures of all the evidence. He said that, and I have the affidavit from him in my book. And let's say, I mean, he did have the pictures of the so-called footprints, which were kind of crude and rough, but they seemed to be footprints of possibly the small aliens. I can't be sure. We don't know because they were not clear enough. But he took pictures of all of this using a light meter he was familiar with and a camera he was familiar with. And so, as he told me and says in his affidavit, he is sure the pictures turned out perfectly, should have, exposure-wise. But he said he asked Lonnie Zamora, since Hynek was going to be in town in that August, to ask him, how come I didn't get my pictures back? I want my pictures back. And when Zamora, as he told me, talked to Hynek, Hynek said, well, look, we couldn't return it because the film was fogged as though by radiation. He may have used the term blackened, either blackened or fogged, as though by radiation. That kind of evidence could lend itself to possibly insight into a highly sophisticated propulsion system, and the pictures could not be returned for that reason. Well, if anyone wants to think that's myth, they'd better think again, because I have offered, and he will be using in the movie, James Fox will be using in the movie Phenomena 701, I think that's the right title, he will be using a high-quality videotape that I had made in Austin of Alan Hynek sitting right out in front of our executive office building in Austin. And I asked him point blank, Dr. Hynek, did you tell that to Zamora? Did the Air Force tell you that that is the reason they didn't return the film? And he confirms it absolutely and unequivocally. So we have a difficult thing here for the university hoax. One is, if in fact it was irradiated, they'd have to explain where they got an isotope that was so strong that it could irradiate the film taken that night, but the next morning people successfully got pictures. It would take a very unusual, very short half-life isotope. The other problem is if you don't want to believe the film was irradiated, you can believe that they simply didn't want to return it because it showed too much evidence, including the vitrified soil. And so you can take either one of the patients, what they gave, or something just as interesting that they just didn't want to have the pictures back because it showed the vitrified soil.
Speaking of photographs, Ray, why don't you mention a very intriguing recent revelation that you had when you were analyzing a photograph that you took of Alan Hynek's back as he was taking a stereoscopic photograph of the site, the direction of where the craft had evidently flown at that point. Now, for our listeners, please understand that Ray was there right when all the government investigators were arriving, right when you even got there, I think, before Hynek did. So we're talking, what, 2 days, I think, after the event or the day after? Is that correct?
Okay. No, not the day after. I arrived on the, I guess it was the 28th, and on the evening of the 28th, and Hynek, in fact, had just arrived, and therefore I had to wait to even see some more until Hynek had him down the hall at the dispatcher's office, police station, sheriff's office, whatever, down the hall for a long, long interview. And this was the 28th. It had happened on the 24th of April, but Hynek was late like me in getting into town. But anyway, in regard to what you asked, it was really strange. We were there at the site. And Hynek is kind of in front of me, just to my east, southeast. And Hynek says to Lonnie and to Chavez, said, look, Can any of you indicate me? I would like to take a picture in the direction that this thing was said to approach. What was the direction of approach? Well, I found this interesting because both of the officers had no moment's hesitation. This meant to me that they both had accepted the account of Opal Grinder and his son, that what the tourist told them, that they had been over there northeast of the site when the thing almost hit the antenna of their old green Cadillac, and then it headed in and Zamora went after it. And so they took this at face value, I understood, when immediately both officers pointed into the northeast, exactly where the tourist had said they were when this happened. So Hynek put up his Air Force, the Air Force had a stereo optical camera for collecting possible UFO evidence made for Hynek, and he put his Polaroid, his stereo optical Polaroid up and to take a picture. And I thought, well, this is interesting. This documents at least that that the officers take this seriously about the approach that would have been indicated by the tourists. And so I said, I've got to get a picture of this. So I put my Orca C3 up, same kind of camera that the senior patrolman had, and I put mine up and took a picture while Hynek was taking his. Now, this is kind of embarrassing to me because, you know, I had the picture and that was it. That was great. And but I hadn't really looked at it closely all of those years until I think it was 2009, maybe more recently than that, maybe just a couple of years ago. I'd have to check my dates and my notes. But I have this picture out of a nice 8x10 photograph of it. It's black and white. And let me state, it shows clearly Hynek there with his camera pointing in the direction of supposedly approach of the object. And my camera's pointing the same direction. Up to the upper left is what appears to be a twin-engine, probably jet, heading in toward Holloman Air Force Base, which means it's kind of up the left and kind of across the picture going toward the east-southeast. And lo and behold, exactly where Hynek's camera, you know, in the let's say approximate direction, we know the exact, but where Hynek's camera appears to be pointing, where mine was pointing, there on the picture in the photograph is a anomalous aerial object.
Oh, wait. Let's just stop right here and do the break. Ray Stanford joins us with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Free from the shackles of corporate America, we're the place for independent thinkers. GCN.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you'd like to listen to GCN programs on the go, I have great news. GCN has created a Droid and iPhone application, and it's free. Just as easy as going to GCNlive.com, click on the banner, and download. Before you know it, you'll be listening to your favorite hard-hitting GCN shows, live or on demand, right on your Droid or iPhone, 24/7 and on the go. So download the Droid and iPhone app free by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Thanks again for listening to GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com.
We the people grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit, then carting to a private bank, having it led back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Hi, Ted Anderson. I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
If you're worried about your health and you're tired of the nasty side effects of harsh drugs or antibiotics, then look no further. Supernatural Silver is the answer. Supernatural Silver is a powerful immune system enhancer that can be used every day to help keep you healthy and well with none of those nasty side effects. It's extremely safe for use internally as well as topically. And Supernatural Silver is hundreds of times more effective than colloidal or ionic silver. It is perfect for use in the sinuses, eyes, ears, and on any wound or skin issue. Supernatural Silver is also extremely effective when taken orally and can help fight off bacteria, viruses, and mold that may be overwhelming your immune system. Go to SupernaturalSilver.com. SupernaturalSilver.com and use the promo code Silver2014 for 20% off of your entire order and give yourself and your loved ones a fighting chance with Supernatural Silver.